And is that worth the trouble?
Certainly, for it is the choice between everlasting life and everlasting death.
Oh, I see, a religious aspect. That ceremony at the table had something to do with your religion too?
Our understanding of religion is so far evolved that it is incomparable with yours.
Have you a religion?
I'm a Catholic.
How strange, a Christian. We are familiar with the work of Christ and the Bible. After you've eaten, you must explain to us how someone with so much property can seriously call himself Christian.
We are intrigued.
On the other hand, it simplifies the explanation of the two cosmic selection laws. The first confirms Christ's condemnation of social discrimination. A high level of technical development liquidates every discrimination and compulsion under pain of chaos and eventual self-destruction. The earth demonstrates the justice of this law in a convincing manner. The social chaos exists already and the threat begins to manifest itself. At the moment, only the great powers have nuclear weapons at their disposal, but the smaller nationalist groups will soon be in the same position. The situation becomes more dangerous every year. Within a short time you will discover the possibility of immaterial radiation and then a handful of people will be capable of producing a weapon that is capable of destroying all mankind. Where does all this lead? How long can a civilization continue to exist where science does not know its responsibilities? The second selection law compels the correct understanding of human relationships. It poses Christian love as a condition for cosmic integration. Only unselfish behavior that restores the original efficiency of natural order can give an intelligent race the certainty of survival until cosmic integration is achieved. That word unselfish sounds so strange. The selfish behavior of the masses, where everyone takes everything they can, prevents the ability to work for the common good to create, for example, a clean planet where the balance of nature can be maintained for an unlimited time. It is also impossible to limit the use of natural resources for the sake of future generations, because a selfish person cannot give up anything for someone else. The greatest problem lies in the law of degeneration, a race that does not succeed in restoring the efficiency of natural selection as it existed in the prehistoric times shall become extinct. How do you justify unlimited freedom with reproduction selection that drastically limits the choice of partners? The answer is that it can only be justified with unselfishness. The partner choice is determined by one's feeling of responsibility. I see, through artificial insemination.
Where did you get that idea?
That doesn't prevent degeneration, it accelerates it.
We are not concerned with producing that biological phenomenon, man. The body with all its selfish demands is just a shell. We are only concerned with the creative intellect. The soul that is capable of unselfish thought.
How do we educate children for the freedom and happiness?
Freedom is the absence of the effect of compulsion on the individual's behavior.
Freedom cannot be obtained with a weapon in the hand.
It can only be obtained by the parents' careful mental forming of their child, then, by the correct conception of good and evil. It is a difficult and complicated task that only becomes possible with natural parental love and the variety of other groups. There may never be any doubt as to who is the father or mother of a child. The important thing is not having children, but bringing them up. For this reason, artificial insemination is unacceptable. The unselfishness is the selection requirement for the immortality of the race. But it is also a requirement for a being with a high mental development before he can achieve happiness.
Happiness is being at peace with oneself and one's surroundings. This is determined to a large extent by one's success in achieving self-set goals, in other words, by a ruthless appraisal of oneself. This individual striving to reach a self-chosen goal is the creativity in man. Creativity is thought that is continually occupied with changing the circumstances in one's life or in that of another. It is creativity that drives men to do even more or even better. There are two kinds of creativity, the material and the immaterial. The first is the individual striving to improve his own living standards. This is done mostly in the field of sex, property and power and is the cause of all the misery on this planet. The individuality expresses itself in egocentricity,
greed and avarice. In the continual reaching for a material goal, a measure of satisfaction is experienced, but when the goal is reached, the satisfaction shows itself to be relative and of short duration, merely an object for comparison with what others have. So it continues toward the next goal, usually a higher income or a higher position, and the search continues, because the satisfaction lies only in the searching. But then a time comes when the search cannot be continued because of sickness, or old age, and life continues in dissatisfaction with itself. The individual has not understood that material gains can never bring lasting satisfaction and happiness. On the other hand, there is the immaterial creativity, your Christian love, and this is lasting happiness. It is the continual striving to improve the living standards of others. It expresses itself in helpfulness, understanding, pity, tolerance, friendliness, esteem, in short, the total concept of unselfish love. It sounds to me like a sort of sterile idealism. Try to understand that it is not. Do you believe that social stability creates unlimited prosperity and complete security? Yes, I can accept that. Can you also accept that a man without creativity can never be happy? Yes, I understand that. What goal can human creativity have when material motives vanish? What can a materialist do in our world, other than be bored to death? What does a man really possess who possesses everything except love? The answer is, nothing. Everything that previous generations have done to create a stable world with a high level of scientific and technical development and unlimited prosperity is worthless when man lacks the love that can give him happiness. Every unselfish deed, every self-sacrifice, heightens the feeling of personal value, of satisfaction. A man who has reached a high degree of unselfishness manifests a lasting personal value as a noticeable side of his personality, wisdom, which appears to be unaffected by setbacks or aging. He becomes invulnerable in his feeling of personal value, his peace with himself, his happiness. There is no alternative, stiff. Natural selection laws are inexorable. Only a race with a high level of unselfishness, or, as we call it, an immaterial structure, can survive. Does all this also apply to us? I can't imagine this world being inhabited by people who love each other. The more we talk, the more we become convinced that you are not a Christian. The whole point of Christ's teaching, love, is completely strange to you. You have apparently never heard of the striving for unselfishness in the Buddhist religion. There is no choice. Only when man is free of material influences can he succeed in bringing up children who, through their unselfish mental attitude, can be really free and happy. You must teach them to love and concern themselves with others. They must learn to be very expressive with their feelings. This makes great demands on their eloquence, to be able to put their feelings into words. This is characterized by their honesty, spontaneity and enthusiasm, their helpfulness and, above all, their ability to raise their love contacts above the physical to great spiritual heights. We seek adventure in the quantity and depth of our human contacts. You have seen this all on the screen in front of you. Iaga is a planet where the people love each other, where people are happy to meet each other and where they find it a pity that they can only take one person at a time in their arms. As soon as our children have reached the age of sexual maturity, the parents arrange for the child to undergo a psychological and medical test. If they pass this, they are then declared legally free and obtain the rights of voting and sexual freedom. We celebrate this with a great feast. The parents rejoice with the children in the fact that they have been judged as being worthy of true freedom. Good Lord, then the parents permit them to go to bed with anyone and everyone? Your surprise is understandable, because you do not know the character structure of our race. Our urge to reproduce is much less than yours, partly because we do not experience the same pleasure in sex. We do not use it as a way of passing the time, but as an expression of intimacy and love. The evolution cycle of Iaga is different, and we have a precisely controlled population growth. Earth should strive for a population explosion so that the race is complete before it has a chance to destroy itself. Sex plays a completely different role by us. There is no comparison. We should add that the position of our women is also vastly different to yours. They have a different creation mandate which causes a fundamental difference. Earth women have a heavy task obligation in the future, which is why they now have the command of obedience to the man. This will give her the right in the future to take over the task of leadership without damaging the principle of equality. Eargon men and women are equals, but have different mandates. Women have the dominant position because they must lead the mental development, they are not sex objects. The subject of sex, which here on earth is regarded as forbidden fruit and therefore takes on an unhealthy appeal, has no adverse effect on us at all. A man-woman relationship that is based solely on sex we consider degrading. Our women would rather die on the spot than be used for a kind of physical training. They make high demands of their partners. They demand their interest, their tenderness and mostly their respect for her as a person, for her intellectual level. Everything is directed at creative expression and the sex act plays a very minor part in it. In many relationships, sex is totally absent, without that absence having any effect on the satisfaction experienced. Once you have really learned to live, it is difficult to understand what Earth being can have as their reason for living. We often wonder about this ourselves, but I think I am beginning to understand what that reason should be. The lesson continued, but I am afraid that it did not penetrate to any great extent. I was too busy with my own thoughts. They were explaining their marriage concepts and personal relationships, based on the separation of sex and propagation, but my mind was filled with questions and doubts. All this was very interesting, but what had it to do with me? It was dear that they had a better life than we have. But, then, they were not human, they did not live in our world, and if they did, they would surely be the same as we are. If, but, why, how, my mind was running around in circles. At the moment that they tried to make clear to me that sexual freedom was not permitted to the earth because we failed in love, I gave up. What is the point of this confrontation with your way of life? Your way of life is not possible for us, even if we wanted to live as you do. The earth can never become like Eargon. Your society strikes me as being a curiosity that has no practical use for us whatsoever. You are right. The earth will never become like Eargon. The earth is, in contrast to Eargon, a thin atmosphere planet of a different character, and this applies also to her inhabitants. We have a different evolution cycle than you, but the goal in the evolution of all the intelligent races in this universe is one and the same. The ways are different. The goal is the same. The practical purpose of this confrontation is the planting of insight, not insight into our technique or our social structure, although this could be of use to you, but into our mentality. Next audio file.